On Wednesday, Manhattan Borough President candidate Lindsay Boylan published a personal essay online accusing Governor Andrew Cuomo of sexual misconduct while she worked in the administration, describing multiple incidents with the governor, including an unsolicited kiss and an invitation to play strip poker. The allegations, which were hinted at by Boylan in a December tweet, were categorically denied by the governor's press secretary, and a handful of current and former aides to the governor said they never saw one specific incident, but as of Thursday afternoon, Cuomo had not addressed the claims head-on. Boylan's story generated statements of concerns from the legislative leaders, but they stopped short of calling for an inquiry into their fellow Democrat, who himself has argued in the past that all allegations of sexual misconduct must be investigated. To discuss the allegations, how they should be handled, and the culture in Albany, we're speaking with State Senator Alessandra Biaggi, a Westchester County Democrat who chairs the chamber's ethics committee and briefly worked in the Cuomo administration. Welcome back to the show, Senator.
Thank you very much for having me.
So what was your reaction to the post from Lindsay Boylan, which includes contemporaneous records from the time the governor's alleged misconduct occurred?
So when I think about the reactions, I'm still kind of having them because it's been about a day. And I think over the course of the past 24 hours, my emotional reaction is definitely evolving. And so yesterday it was rage and just complete anger, because if you read that post and you are just reading it for what's on its face, I mean, it's alarming and it's abhorrent behavior. So that's the first thing. I think today I just feel so sad that we have to live in a state where just different standards apply to different people, different rules apply to different people, even though it's something we're trying to change. And I think the probably the most important thing that I felt is that I believed her and I continue to believe her. And I just feel for her in such a very significant way, because to be in a situation like the one that she describes is terrifying. And for the thousands of women and men too, but women who find themselves in those situations, it's terrifying and it's scary and you don't know what to do. And the power dynamics play a very significant role. So I feel like I am grateful that she has used her voice here. It's incredibly brave. And I really do hope that the next steps are an independent investigation.
Well, speaking of an investigation and an independent one, what would be the right entity to handle something like that? Is there an oversight body that has that independent role in Albany right now?
It's such a good question. And what I've done for the past 24 hours or so, I should say, to be intellectually honest, 12 hours or so, right? 12 hours, what I've been doing is looking into what are the different routes here. And there's several that I'll identify, but there's one that comes to the top that I just think is probably on everyone's mind, which is J-COPE. And I will just get to the point here on that. On every one of these avenues, I think that there is a potential lack of being independent in terms of this investigation. But for the first one, J-COPE, it certainly is not independent. Why? Because J-COPE is very closely tied to the governor. He appoints over 50% of the people who are on the commission. In fact, 7 out of the 14 commissioners are picked by the governor and his administration, and the rest are appointed by the leader in the Senate and the Assembly, and then the minority leaders in both houses. It's a political appointed, you know, commission that's supposed to deal with ethics, but it's really not independent at all. And we've seen historically that this is a body that's just inept at even dealing with these kinds of things. I think the next option is definitely the legislature. I have even looked at my own committee. I'm the chair of the Ethics and Internal Governance Committee. It is not clear that I have jurisdiction of the behavior of the governor. Why do I say that? Because how my committee has been interpreted is mainly for the behavior of the members of the legislature. However, we are looking into that to see if that is just because of norms or if that is actually based on the public officer's law. So that's a TBD. We will definitely continue to pursue that. And then the final thing I'll say is that the Attorney General's office comes up and comes to mind, because the Attorney General has an ability, I believe, to appoint a special prosecutor. And so that could be an independent special prosecutor. And so that could be one avenue where, even though the Attorney General's office does, of course, represent the executive branch when any kind of case is brought against the state of New York, there is an option within that office to have a special prosecutor. And I think that we can feel very confident that the Attorney General not only would be able to do an excellent job on this, but is also an independent actor here, which is reflected in her pursuing and reporting on the nursing home crisis in response to the governor's decisions that he made during the pandemic.
If the Attorney General's office or a special prosecutor were to look into these allegations, would they need a referral from the governor himself to get going? Or is this something that the Attorney General can initiate on her own?
It's a good question. I don't want to answer yes or no, because I don't know the answer to that, but I will just get to the point of that. If the governor has some kind of interference there, then that's not the right route, right? It just doesn't really work. One of the things that I also thought about, just because I'm trying to put my like creative legal hat on, Lindsay Boylan describes some of the instances when she is with the governor in the air, right? They're on the plane. And whenever you're thinking about the law that applies to air or water, it's federal law. And so there could be some angle there, which I guess would lead to the Department of Justice. But again, these are just very preliminary, like back of the envelope, what can we do here kinds of just steps in motion so we can really make sure we're having like a real meaningful conversation about this. So that's just what we've gotten down to here so far.
So you're not mincing words about the need for an independent investigation. And there are other members of the Democratic Conference in the Senate and Assembly who have made similar calls. Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins put out a statement on Wednesday saying the allegations were deeply disturbing and that the alleged behavior had no place in the workplace or anywhere else, but did not make any sort of call for an investigation. What do you think of that response?
She's entitled to the response that is fitting for her and that is, you know, in line with how she feels in this very moment, but it doesn't preclude other people from having the positions that they take, which is to have an independent investigation. So I have learned in a very, whether it's painful way or not, to really like hold back judgment on where other people are or to cast any kind of judgment on what other people say, because even though, yes, it of course matters, right? And hopefully we are united as a body to care about having an independent investigation. I think that each one of us speaking up on our own and coming to our own conclusions is just as important.
I guess one of the reasons I'm interested in the leader's position is because of the gray area with regards to the Senate Ethics Committee and its ability to look at this, I was wondering whether she might ultimately have the final say in terms of deciding whether, you know, you can go after this or not. And, you know, based on that initial statement, it doesn't seem like she has any interest in doing that. So are you concerned at all that she's going to have the final word on what the Ethics Committee can do? Or is that decision going to rest with you and whatever lawyers you consult with?
So two things. The first thing is that, of course, the majority leader definitely has the final say. But what I can say about the Senate Majority Conference, from my experience, is that every person that is a member of the conference has a say, and that collective position is the position that we go with. And whether that is something that we all agree with, right? It's not, we don't always all agree, and that's just very much human nature, but that is the process that has gone on inside of the Senate. So I'm not concerned about that because I know that there will be a discussion about it, and I know that we will take it seriously. So time is going to tell to see where everyone stands, but my hope is that just by reading the words that Lindsay Boylan wrote and just thinking about that experience that she had to go through, that will be enough to compel every single person in the legislature to want to pursue an independent investigation.
So the legislature in recent years, driven by members like yourself and a group of former legislative staffers, has taken a number of actions to curb harassment of all types and address sexual misconduct. During that work over the last 2+ years, was there any thought given to addressing this gray area with regards to potentially investigating or charging the governor?
So not about the governor, but what I will tell you, and I'm a co-sponsor of this bill. So there's a bill by Senator Liz Krueger, and it's a proposed constitutional amendment. The number is S855. And the purpose of the bill essentially is to overhaul our state ethics system and to replace JACOB and the LEC, which I didn't reference earlier, but the LEC is the Legislative Ethics Commission, and they would be replaced by a truly independent ethics enforcement agency, right? And so members would be appointed by all three branches of government, 2 by the governor, 1 by each of the leaders in the majority, also 7 by the chief judge of New York and presiding justices of the appellate division. And essentially what it creates is the New York State Government Integrity Commission. That, to me, is the next step that we've got to take here, because as you can see, there doesn't seem to be a clear route where, unfortunately, the governor doesn't have either power over the process or a say in the process. And I think that for everyone else in our state government, we have a process to hold people accountable, to investigate them, to recommend appropriate discipline, except for our governor. So it's not that that has been leading the conversation when it comes to our discussions around the constitutional amendment to have this new ethics system, but it certainly is something that is noted and is known. And then there are other loopholes in our laws as well, because, you know, just going to look through some of the sexual harassment laws that we passed in 2019, we didn't do everything, even though we did a lot. And we broke a lot of very important ground. But there are still things we can do, like, for example, create the crime of sexual harassment, because believe it or not, the crime of sexual harassment does not exist. And even though it does not seem that that would apply to the facts of this specific case as it relates to Lindsay Boylan, the point that I'm making is that there is certain conduct that just goes unchecked, even in our criminal justice system. And I am someone who is not very much on the side of wanting to create new crimes or take punitive stances. But the reality is that a lot of people do experience certain behaviors that really doesn't have anywhere to go in terms of accountability. And that is a huge problem when it comes to this kind of abusive behavior.
You tweeted Wednesday that you had witnessed similar behavior to what Lindsay Boylan described in her essay. Can you elaborate on what you were referring to?
Absolutely. So I worked for the governor's office, the executive chamber, for roughly 8 months or so. And what I was referring to is that, and I mentioned this, you know, a few times now, the culture in the governor's office is toxic, full stop. There is not a person on this planet who has worked in that office who would not agree with that, unless they are the close circle that are surrounding the governor. Why? Because they're part of it. So that's number one. Okay, that's probably like one of the most important things. And what I mean when I say that is that there's this culture of fear. There is a culture of berating people and belittling people. There is absolutely a culture of screaming at people for very small things. And frankly, I mean, there's no reason to ever do any of those things, but I'm trying to make the point that it's not as if someone had even, you know, messed up royally to the point where like someone was screaming. No. And that's not acceptable either. So that is the culture that I experienced, that the people I worked with experienced, and that is not okay. It's not okay. And so as someone who worked there, physically was there, I believe that I have a good viewpoint into that. Obviously, you know, there's lots of people now talking up and speaking up about it. So that is certainly important here. But I think the most important thing to just keep in mind is that why are we talking about this at all? Because the experience that Lindsay Boylan has experienced, which is allegations of sexual harassment, again, I believe what she said is true. And comparing that to the treatment that Assemblymember Ron Kim had of the governor, where the governor called him and said he was going to destroy him, that his career essentially was over, this pattern of abusive behavior is something that we see in people who use their power as a tool to control people, and it is abusive. And the scale of and the connection between these things is very clear to me, and I think it's becoming very clear now to the public.
And after a quick break, we'll have more with Senate Ethics Committee Chair Alessandra Biaggi about the sexual misconduct allegations against Governor Andrew Cuomo and the culture he allegedly promotes in the Capitol.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.
We're continuing our conversation with Senate Ethics Committee Chair Alessandra Biaggi, who before the break was describing the unhealthy and verbally abusive working environment during her time in the Cuomo administration. That culture you described, do you feel like that trickles down from the top, and the top being Governor Andrew Cuomo?
Absolutely.
Can you further articulate, though, the verbal abuse you witnessed and experienced?
I mean, it's just yelling. It's just yelling at people because they don't work fast enough, because they didn't do something right. Because, to be honest with you, David, to like make any sense of it, this is something I've thought about since I left the chamber in 2017, and I cannot make sense of it. I actually have really tried to understand what would motivate or what has happened to him as a governor that he behaves this way. Like, why is this happening to everybody that he interacts with? I don't know the answer. I really don't know. But I do know that there's one thing that is consistent, which is that everyone that has worked for him, with apparently the exception of one person that was on Twitter saying that his experience was good, feels this way. And so, and to note on that for a second, both things can be true. People can have a really good experience with someone, or and at the same time, people can have a really bad or toxic experience with someone or working for someone. And I think that we are now evolved as a society, especially in the state of New York, to be able to hold those discordant truths in our mind. And we ought to be able to say, okay, well, you know, that might have been that man's experience, but this young woman's experience was abhorrent. And there has to be accountability there. So, you know, just going back to just the culture of it, it is pervasive and it is unfortunate. And the reason why it's relevant to New York state government is because it absolutely prevents the state of New York from having good governance and from being able to achieve and reach its highest potential. I could point to other examples outside of what we're talking about. One that comes to mind right now is Andy Byford. Andy Byford has solved transportation across the whole entire world. I mean, there isn't a country that he's gone to where he hasn't solved the transportation crisis. And yet he left. He left in New York, and he wasn't able to actually solve our transportation crisis through the MTA because Cuomo shut him out. This is a man who literally is the expert. We want him to be here. I mean, what a shame that that behavior and that culture that surrounds Governor Cuomo is the exact culture that is preventing New Yorkers from being able to get the things that they need. And I mean, I could talk to you for an entire 24-hour period about this and just point to so many different examples. But that's the thing that we need to make sure that New Yorkers are understanding.
Well, I want to touch on something you mentioned there about how people can have different experiences, because some of the governor's allies, including some who worked for him at the same time as Boylan, have put out statements to the effect that Cuomo's a great guy. I've never seen conduct like that's what's been described, you know, going only so far as to maybe acknowledge he makes dumb jokes sometimes, which anyone who follows his public persona could also acknowledge. How should these types of defenses be processed? Are they meaningful in any way?
Well, they're meaningful in the sense that the people who are saying them are also abusive in their behavior. So I think we should take that in the context of what we're talking about.
Yeah, right? What do you mean by that?
So we've seen many of the governor's top staff members, namely his secretary to the governor, Melissa DeRosa, as well as his senior advisor, Rich Azzopardi, not only go after legislators or be tough, quote unquote, as they like to call it, but be abusive, right? In 2019, myself, Assemblywoman Yuli Nu, and Senator Jessica Ramos were called, quote, idiots for calling out the governor about his $25,000 per ticket fundraiser that he had during the budget when he brought his budget director, and people who paid for that ticket also had business before the state that was going to be decided on in the state budget. That's one. In other instances where I have been critical of the governor for his policy decisions, again, it's policy decisions and his and how that affects New Yorkers. I was asked if I was, quote, drunk for pointing certain things out. So there's a level of sass that I think that people almost expect, especially if they're trying to get information or trying to get attention of somebody that they need information from. Or there's a level of, yeah, being tough. Absolutely. I absolutely want to be tough. I think a lot of leaders want to be tough, but you cross a line when you start to not only attack and berate people, but you also start to take on the toxic behavior of the principal that you work for, and then you pass it on to other people. Why? Because that principal doesn't want to be the one doing it, so they send out their people to do it on their behalf. And I'm just naming two people. There are others who have done that for the governor in the past. And that is not acceptable. It's not okay. It's just not okay to treat people like that.
The denial of the allegations from the governor's office on Wednesday came from his press secretary, who is a woman. And based on my search of the governor's press releases, this is one of two times she's issued a statement in 2+ years in this position. I found 10 statements during that window from the governor's de facto spokesman, who you mentioned, Rich Azzopardi. What do you think of the administration putting a woman communication staffer out front on this issue, even though she's not traditionally the spokesperson for the governor?
Well, I didn't actually even think about it that way, because I read the words that any of his spokespeople write or put into the public as his words, because nothing goes out of that office without his approval. So I actually wasn't even paying attention to that. But when I was looking at the response, I felt like the response only proved that the part that they were pointing to about being on the plane was true. They actually validated a part of Lindsay's claims. And I think that, unfortunately, what I would have liked to have seen that statement say is that they're taking the allegations seriously and that they're asking for an independent investigation themselves.
What do you anticipate the next, 5 weeks are going to be like as we move towards the budget deadline, with not only this hanging over Albany, but also a federal probe into the administration for its handling of nursing home data and a general dissatisfaction from state lawmakers about their relationship with the second floor?
Well, I think it's going to be a challenging time, but it's not like this is not a set of circumstances that all of us collectively cannot handle in a professional way, right? We were all elected for a specific reason. We are doing our jobs in pursuing certain information that we feel was not given to us in good faith, and we'll continue to do that until we have answers. When it comes to the budget is always a very challenging time of year. It's a very painful time of year as well, because the budget process is also a process that is predominantly controlled by the executive branch of government, a fact that is very different than almost all 49 other states in this country, with the exception of California, where the legislature actually has more power, and I actually don't agree with that. So I think it's going to be challenging for those two reasons, in addition to the fact that I'm sure it's not lost on anybody that we are in a massive fiscal crisis, and we've got to raise revenue and make sure that we are responsible for taking care of the needs of New Yorkers. And what motivates me to care about all of these things that we've just discussed today, there are so many reasons, but one of the most important reasons is that I take my job seriously. And that means to me that I am going to ask the hard questions and I'm going to get those answers. Why? Because behind the nursing home deaths, there are 15,000 families who have suffered and are traumatized, frankly, by what has gone on here. And also behind what Lindsay Boylan has shared with the public, I mean, that is also a traumatic experience. And as a survivor of sexual abuse, I understand the dynamics of the trauma from that kind of behavior and what it can do to you. And oftentimes it does silence people. And so these are the things that I believe we've got to get right. And why? Because public trust matters, accountability matters, and being transparent with the public matters. And so all of those things can still happen, and we can still manage to balance a budget and negotiate a budget, and we can do it professionally because that's what we've been tasked to do. So I am not concerned about that. But what I will say is I will keep an eye out on just how the executive responds to certain provisions that are slipped into the budget in the middle of the night, because that seems to be one of the things that happens regularly. And we'll keep a really close eye on what those things are and how they impact the public, and then be very forthcoming with what we see the executive putting into the budget, either in the beginning of the process or in the final moments when, unfortunately, the most damage can be done.
To date, Lindsay Boylan has not talked about her allegations, except on her own terms, whether through her initial tweet or this recent online post. Do you think she has a responsibility to take questions either from the media or potentially an investigative body that might look into this further?
Well, I mean, I think that if there is an investigation and it requires her to be present, I think that's, something that she's going to have to decide on her own. Of course, that's her own decision, even if it's a requirement or not. But I think that it's really important that we, as not only allies, but also survivors, and also even if you're not a survivor, but you are an ally or if you're just a member of the public, to just remember that when we cast either pressure or shame on a person who has experienced abuse, it is a triggering event for that person. And so we have to be really gentle with how we deal with this. And so I think that she does not have to respond to anything that she doesn't want to. I don't feel that she has to do really anything that she doesn't want to be honest with you. Why? Because she's experienced an incredibly traumatic set of experiences. And we have to be really cognizant of that and not add to the trauma or to the abuse by, shaming her for not speaking up. I think that's a really damaging road to go down, and we should absolutely avoid it at all costs.
What do you think of Republican, state, and federal lawmakers who right now are, you know, licking their chops over these latest allegations and are putting out statements. And, you know, for the last 5 years, though, were completely silent on allegations against about harassment and misconduct by then-President Donald Trump. And at the same time, what do you think about Democratic lawmakers who are basically hiding right now and would have otherwise been very vocal, whether it was about Donald Trump or Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh?
I think where I land on this is like this. You never want to make anybody wrong for reaching the right conclusion, no matter how long it takes them, right? So it is a good thing when people, Republicans and Democrats, are able to stand up against abuse, full stop, right? And if it takes them 5 years to get there, then it takes them 5 years to get there. What I feel like is important to note here is that I would hope that there would be a consistency and a consistent application of the same outrage to members of their own party. That is something I think is important for integrity purposes and also for trust from the public. When I think about the impeachment that just happened in Washington, D.C., and how Democrats were so outraged, rightfully so, by the way, I am one of them, for the Republicans who didn't vote to impeach Donald Trump, that felt like proper outrage. It felt like, man, like we're siding with insurrectionists and these Trump supporters who are calling for violence and trying to attack and kill members of Congress, and you don't think that's enough to impeach the president who provoked this behavior? That's just so, I cannot even fathom that in my mind, frankly. But again, what I think played into that, or not I think, I know played into that, is politics. And so when I think about the Democrats right now, I mean, there is no firm ground to stand on at all if we do not hold our own accountable, because then we are no better than them.
Are you surprised that Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul has yet to weigh in on this?
No.
Why aren't you surprised?
She often does not weigh in on a lot of the things that the governor does or things that the administration does. I would love to see the lieutenant governor weigh in because she is a member of that administration, whether or not the governor wants to admit that or not, because he definitely doesn't include her in a lot of the things. And so I'm very cognizant of that. But she is still a duly elected member of that administration. And it would be very encouraging to legislators like myself and members of the public if she did speak out.
Well, we've been speaking with State Senator Alessandra Biaggi. She's a Westchester County Democrat who chairs the Chamber's Ethics Committee. Senator, as always, thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to the Capitol Press Room, which you can take with you on the go wherever you download podcasts. Our engineer in Syracuse is Dave White. My producer in Albany is Tim Williams. I'm David Lombardo. Thanks for listening.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.